भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10. Let's see, what's the text? What's the text number up on the board?
Seven?
Okay. Yadi dasyasi me kaman varan tvam varda rishabha. Kamanam riddhi bhavata. Did I skip a word? Oh, I'm sorry. Asamroham bhavatah tu vrane varam. Yadi das yasi me kaman varam stvam varadarshabham. Kamanam ridya samroham bhavatastu vrane varam. Yadidas yasi me kaman varamstvam varadarshaba. Kamanam ridya samroham bhavatastu varane varam. Yadi dasyasi me kaman varam stvam varadarshabam. Kamanam ridya samroham bhavatastu varane varam. Ladies, please. Yadi, if. Dasyasi, want to give. May, me. Kaman, anything desirable. Varan, as your benediction. Tvam, you. Varada, Rishabha, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give any benediction. Kamanam, of all desires for material happiness. Riddhi, within the core of my heart. Asamraham, no growth. Bhavataha, from you. Tu, then. Vrne, I pray for. Varam, such a benediction. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation, O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Please repeat, O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Purport. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to pray for benedictions from the Lord. He said, Nadanam najanam na sundarim kavitam va jagad ishav kamaye mama janmani janmarishvare vavatad bhaktiya ahaituki tvayi. Which means, quote, O my Lord, I do not want from you any amount of wealth, nor many followers, nor a beautiful wife, for these are all materialistic desires. But if I have to ask you for any benediction, I pray that in whatever forms of life I may take my birth, under any circumstances, I will not be bereft of your transcendental devotional service. Unquote. Devotees are always on the positive platform, in contrast to the Mayavadis, who want to make everything impersonal or void. One cannot remain void, sunyavadi. Rather, one must possess something. Therefore, the devotee on the positive side wants to possess something, and this possession is very nicely described by Prahlad Maharaj, who says, if I must take some benediction, excuse me, from you, I pray that within the core of my heart there may be no material desires. Repeat, there may be no material desires. The desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not at all material. End of purport. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmaditam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. And I thank you all for coming, and pray to all of you, and all of you who may be listening on the internet, I pray for your benedictions or your prayers, that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone here and everywhere. So we have a very interesting, very important verse, a verse which Srila Prabhupada quotes quite often because it's so important. It's kind of a core verse. It's at the rock bottom of our very movement. Everyone in the material world is striving for what? They're striving to fulfill their material desires, not knowing what the ultimate consequences will be of these material desires. They have no idea what will come from them. They simply think that as a result of the force of Maya upon them, that the more material desires you have and you satisfied, the happier and more satisfied and fulfilled you will be. This is Maya. This is the idea that acquiring, accumulating, aggrandizing, that will bring me happiness. This is what we're taught from an early age. We want to get into a profession where we can earn some money, and with that money purchase some kind of sense pleasure. And the more pleasure that we can have, the more we think that we will be happier and happier and happier. So material desires are what are emphasized. But Krishna says an intelligent person does... do you know the next words? You know? Yes, thank you. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material, which are due to contact with material senses. Such pleasures of the senses have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. So this is a very important, very emphatic instruction, that a wise person does not take part in them because, as it is said in the verse, they bring miseries, different kinds of miseries. Miseries of the physical or material body, miseries of the mind, miseries of the intelligence, overall miseries. For example, if a person takes an excess of material sense pleasure through any one of them, let's take the mouth, an excess of material pleasures by satisfying the tongue, eating and eating and eating more and more and more, well, ultimately he will become sick. If he will not have a bellyache, he'll have some other kind of an ache. And if he makes this a habit of eating voraciously, then the result will be is that, of course, there will be illness. And when there is illness, there is, of course, misery. And interestingly enough, that everyone is trying to avoid misery. Nobody wants misery. Everybody hates misery. And yet everyone is doing that which will produce more and more misery in their lives. So it's a paradox where people are working for something to try to, they want to avoid something, and yet they're doing the very thing which will bring them more and more misery. You see, so I gave the tongue as one example, eating is one example of physical miseries, or we may get physical miseries in our eyes, or we may have a problem in our ears, or in our voice, or in our stomach, or we may have in our intestines, in our joints, there are our heart. There are any number of miseries that a person can get as a result of stimulating or over-surfeiting the senses. When the senses are overstimulated, when their senses are bombarded, when they're loaded, while the immediate experience is very pleasant, is very enjoyable, and one not only feels that this is great, this is wonderful, but let me take more and more and more. I mean, we all know that first scoop of ice cream is so delicious, and then, oh, let me take another, and then a second, and then a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth, and before you know it, the pint is gone, and then the quart is gone, and before you know it, it's all gone. It's all down here. And then it's, oh, my belly, I shouldn't have done that, I shouldn't have done that, it's wrong. So this is the normal result of it tastes so good. And what's important is to remember in this is that any sensual experience, and I just gave one of the tongue, it could be the ears, it could be the skin, the nose. If we become attached to those, the most intense sensual experiences are both the tongue, as it's mentioned in the prayer, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable, and the sexual. Both of those make a very intense impact upon the senses and upon the mind. And anything which makes us an intense, pleasurable impact upon the mind will go deep into the, it will go to the conscious mind, of course. And then it goes deep into the subconscious mind. And when it goes into the subconscious mind, What happens is this. It does lays there for a while, and one feels the satisfaction of having enjoyed himself or herself in that form of sense pleasure. But in a few days or a few weeks, that little pleasure which we had, which is lying in a vritti, or it's a form, it's what we call a pleasure form. It's the vibration of that pleasure. It's lying in the subconscious, and slowly it begins to bubble up, sort of. And then it comes into the consciousness as a thought. And it's just an idea. Let us just say it's a particular food. I mean, we've all had this. And we're thinking, gee, really would be nice if I could have some sweet rice. Where's it getting sweet rice? I wonder if the temple's got some sweet rice today. So you go over to the temple, and sure enough, it's Sunday. They've got some sweet rice there. Wow, how wonderful. So the thought was there. It was only a little thought, but then it became a driving force. Then it forces you. Well, last time I was here, I only had 2 sweet rices. I'm going to have 3 today because, after all, it didn't do me any harm. So you take the first, the second, the third. Wow, I really feel great. So it's a strong impression it makes because it's so delicious. It's so tasty. It's so satisfying. So, again, it makes a deep impression. And again, in a week later, or maybe now it's 3 days later, or maybe it's 2 days later, and again that little vibration comes up, and oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a little more? But where can I can't get sweet rice today. It's not Sunday. They don't make it on Sunday. Or maybe they got something else. So in this way, the senses, or I should say the mind which receives the impression from the senses, it dogs the living entity. It drives him. It pushes him. It manipulates him and gives him, and he makes excuses. And he says, well, you know, if I wanted to, I could give this up in a second. Of course, I'm not saying that anybody should give up sweet rice. That would be impossible for most of us. So, but the important point is that it drives us, it manipulates us, it compels us, because it's natural for the living entity to want to enjoy. Why is that? Because pleasure, bliss, is our nature. In our original nature, our original form, when there is no darkness over the soul, we are Satchit Ananda, eternality, bliss, and knowledge. Absolute. This is the nature of Krishna. This is what transcendence is. And when that bliss is lacking in our lives, well, then we have to, in some way, satisfy it. If we are covered by ignorance, we are not experiencing the bliss of transcendence. Impossible. The only way we can experience the bliss of transcendence is in connection with, in association with the Supreme Lord. As you chant the Hare Krishna mantra with all your heart and soul, or whether you gaze at the beautiful deities, or whether you sing the beautiful songs dedicated or devoted to Krishna, as you sing them with your heart, then what happens in association with Krishna, because Krishna is in his name, in association with Krishna, the darkness which is surrounding the soul is slowly diminishing. It's slowly lightening. And one begins to feel a glimmer of that joy, the inner joy, inner happiness. As it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, a liberated person, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul experiences unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme Lord. So that's what it's all about. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme Lord, and ultimately he attains the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is saying that if you want to get real happiness, it has to come from me, he's saying. You've got to get it from me, and I'm here with an infinite supply of that happiness, that bliss, that joy that you're looking for outside, but which you will never get in the form that you really need it. Pure bliss, pure happiness, pure ecstasy. You won't get that out there. What you're going to get is a temporary fix, a temporary pleasure. And after a while, those temporary pleasures will wear off. They will not satisfy. For example, let's take Hiranyakashipu. Although he had an abundance of pleasures at his disposal, he could eat what he wants. He could have every taste, that every concoction or anything that has been fabricated or created in the form of food. He could have that. He had thousands of cooks to cook him anything that he wanted. He could get it any place in the world. And yet, in spite of the fact that he had all the pleasure that he was at his disposal, he was still unhappy. How do we know this? Well, it's mentioned very carefully, clearly, that he was always drunk on these smelly wines. He was always drinking and drinking. Why drinking? Because he was miserable. Although he had so much pleasure, the pleasure was there. But what's the result of having an excess of pleasure? It's ennui or depression. The more you bombard the senses with pleasure, the ultimate result is depression. You feel terrible. You feel malaise. You feel indifferent. You don't feel have a desire to really live, to get up and go, to be enthusiastic, to do things. Initially, when you took the pleasure, you felt great. But later on, after the pleasure died down and died out, then what? Emptiness. Complete emptiness. And what do you do when you're empty? Well, you have to fill up some way. And the way Hiranyakashipu would fill up is he would take these drinks, you know, wines, and get drunk. And Prahlad Maharaj could see this. He watched it. He observed it and said, God, my father is really, what a fool. What an idiot. Look at him. He owns everything. He's got it all. And look how miserable he is. I don't want any material desires. So that's what he's asking in this particular verse. He's saying to the Lord, in effect, he's saying, I don't want to be like my father. Never, 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 never let me be like my father, because he was miserable. And look at me, Narada Muni. He gave me the holy name. He gave me the eternal principles of living. And I've lived them, notwithstanding the fact that I've been threatened, and challenged, and I've been tormented and tortured. In spite of all that, I'm ecstatic. I'm happy. I'm, of course, not as happy as I would like to be, because unless I see all those souls out there who are like my father, miserable, unfortunate, depressed, disgusted, unless I see them happy just as I'm happy, then I can't be completely happy. This is the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. This is what he wanted. He wanted everyone to be blissful, to be peaceful, to be a devotee of the Supreme Lord. To have to love the Lord with all our heart and with all our soul, with all our might. He wanted to love unconditionally, undemandingly, completely, giving up body, giving up mind, giving up intelligence for what? For the pleasure of the Lord. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering unto me. In this way you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, says Krishna, you will be liberated and you will come to me. So Krishna is making a guarantee. He's making a promise. He says, just give up everything to me. Do it for me. You're going to your job. Today, some of you are listening, you'll be getting into your car, you'll be going on the freeway or the highway, wherever, and you'll have to be doing different work. Krishna is saying, don't forget me. I'm your real boss. The person who's paying you the paycheck is getting that money from me, Krishna is saying. I'm his boss. He thinks he's the doer. He thinks he's the controller. He's the nothing. Okay? I'm your boss. So remember that. So when you're sitting at your computer monitor, please put my picture in front of you so that you could remember who's paying you at the end of the week. You know. So if you will remember that, you see, then you will have the proper devotion. You won't be devoted to Mr. Whoever is out there who thinks he's Mr. Great. You will be devoted to me. You'll understand. And though externally you may play your part, oh yes, Mr. Jones or Mr. Green, Mr. Brown, I thank you very much for this job and I'm trying to do my very best. Well, you have a very wonderful attitude. You're so enthusiastic. You're so eager. You do such good work. What's the secret of your motivation? Well, I guess you must be a great boss.
Really?
So the motivation is Krishna. So when a person takes shelter in Krishna, when he thinks of Krishna, as Krishna says, think of me. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. This is what King Ambarish did. He was a king. He had endless amount of responsibilities. He had to manage a kingdom. He had administered. He had counselors. He had servants by the thousands. His wives, children. And then they had to go to war at times. But he never forgot the legs are for going to the temple to look at Krishna. The eyes are to look at Krishna. My mouth is to utter beautiful prayers to Krishna. The flowers that grow in my garden are to be offered to Krishna. The flowers are to be smelled after Krishna has smelled them. The food that I have here is to be offered to Krishna and then taken as remnants. Everything I do is to be circulate around the focal point of Krishna. He is my all in all. So when he went into battle, there was one thought on his mind. I fight for Krishna. As Krishna says, do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness and distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. In this way, you'll be freed from all, reactions. Do not fear, he says to Arjuna. You don't have to fear. Just do it as your duty, but go one step further. Do it as a love offering to me. And if you do it as a love offering to me, you will feel such joy, such peace, such strength, such love. You will feel complete, fulfilled, satisfied. Most people feel incomplete. You ask them, are you happy? Well, sort of, but something's missing in my life. Well, Krishna's missing, but they don't know it. And that's why we do book distribution, to let them know what's missing in their life. This is what Prabhupada told us. This is what he gave us. What's missing in your life is Krishna. Krishna is all bliss. He's all peace. He's all strength. He's all knowledge. He's all love. So when you focus upon him, when you look at him, when you pray to him, when you bow down to him, when you thank him, when you glorify him, when you honor him, when you feel so completely indebted to him, when you do that, you feel he reciprocates in such an amazing way. He gives his reciprocation in the form of that completeness, that fulfillment, that satisfaction that we look for. You look at the trees, and when you have that satisfaction, you think, that's Krishna's tree. That's his handiwork. He made that tree. Look at that beautiful cloud with the silver lining and the pink, you know. He made those things. That was him, and the beautiful blue skies. And then you see beautiful faces, female, male faces, beautiful, put together, etched. Only Krishna could carve that in such a beautiful way. He is the source of all beauty, and it manifests on his own face. He is glory. He is beauty. He is everything that we could ever want, everything that we could ever desire. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj indirectly is saying, not only don't let me have material desires, but let me have spiritual desires. I want to be devoted to you. I want to be dedicated to you. I want to love you. I want to serve you. I want to give you my all. So what are the things that enable us to increase our spiritual desires? For example, Krishna says Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar of Instruction, one should not eat more than necessary or collect more funds than are required. Over-endeavor for mundane things that are difficult to attain. Talk unnecessarily. Practice the rules and regulations of the scriptures merely for the sake of practicing them. Don't associate with persons who are uninterested in Krishna consciousness, and don't be greedy for mundane attainments, because as it is mentioned in the text, they will bring you only misery. Then what should I do? Be enthusiastic, endeavor with confidence, always be patient, follow the regular principles of hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, abandon the association of non-devotees and follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. In this way, you will become truly, deeply, immensely happy. No question about it. So he is making this point very, very clear. And there are so many others, as it is mentioned in the text. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Why constantly? Because when you chant in that manner, when you chant with your whole heart, feeling that you're lower than the straw on the street, feeling that you're lower than the lowest place in the Pacific Ocean, which is 37,000 feet down deep in the Aleutian Islands, you're lower than that. When you feel you are so low, then Krishna sees that. I don't want to usurp your position. I don't want to take your limelight. I don't want to be in your spotlight. I want everyone to glorify you, to honor you, to celebrate you, to applaud you. I want you to be the main fixture of my life and the main fixture of everyone's life. And when we do that, Krishna sees that we want nothing and we want everything for Him. He floods us with Himself. He floods Himself with His joy, His bliss, His peace, His strength. All those things come flooding into us. And we see this so abundantly pictured in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We see it in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see it in Ramananda Roy. We see it in Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. We see it in Gadadhar Pandit. We see all these great personalities flooded with the ecstasy, the joy, the happiness of that completeness which comes from total, complete surrender to the Supreme Lord. And what is total surrender to the Supreme Lord? What does that mean? Accept what is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Believe firmly that the Lord will always protect you, His devotees. Always feel dependent upon His mercy and have no separate interests besides the interest of God. Only His interest is important. Now, some of you are out there and you're wondering, what do you mean? I have to go to a job. I have to sit at a computer. I have to punch in all kinds of bills, $1,000 here, $100. How am I going to think of God? Well, I already told you, put that picture of Krishna right on your monitor. And put a few on the side as well. And if you have enough guts, you get a tattoo of Krishna on your wrist. You got one also? Can somebody put his hand? Oh, you got a card. Wonderful. Welcome to the club. So, yeah, you can do that. I do that because every time I look at my watch, I see the word time, and then I see the initial K, Krishna, and then I see again the word time, which came as a gift from Time Magazine because I've subscribed. They didn't know that they were helping my spiritual life. Time I am, says Krishna. So when I look at that, I says, yes, time is getting short, very short. 80 years old and a half now, soon 81, 82, 3, 4, gone forever. Out. So it reminds me, yes, every second goes by. Am I thinking of Krishna? Am I glorifying Krishna? Am I remembering Krishna? Am I forgetting you? Why should I forget someone who is so meaningful, who is so caring, who is so loving, who is so sweet, who is so deserving of all my energy and my love and my consciousness? If he's giving us the light today, the air, food, clothing, shelter, your home, all these things right now. As a result of some of the tornadoes that have occurred over the last few days, there are people without homes who thought they would always have a home. So we have a home because we're living under grace, God's grace. And that grace will continue until Krishna wants to withdraw it. And we hope that He never will withdraw it, that He will enable us to have a home and a temple and deities so that we continue to grow and develop in our Krishna consciousness, so that our heart will become larger and larger, expanding and expanding and greater in love and greater deeds and greater service, so that we can give Krishna not only more and more, but better and better qualities of the more. It's got to be sweet. It should be full of affection. It should be full of dedication. It should be full of surrender. As I said, accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Believe firmly that the Lord will always protect His devotees. These concepts, these principles, must be an indelible part of our every movement. We walk across the street, are we dull-minded, are we blank-minded, or are we thinking, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. Good. Wonderful, thank you, but don't do it just in here. When you cross the street and you're by yourself, you're driving in your car, think Krishna, not just, you know, well, I get those bills paid, well, I get the mortgage paid, and this and that. Krishna will take care of everything if you keep chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Krishna says, those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. What does that mean? It means that He will take care. He's giving you a promise. He will take care of what you have, and He will give you what you need if you simply depend upon Him and offer everything that comes to you to Him. Consider your home His. Consider your car His. Consider your body His. Consider your relatives His. Consider your friends His. Consider everything in this world as belonging to whom? Krishna. And if you think that everything belongs to Krishna, you will see everything in a Krishna-conscious way. The tree belongs to Krishna. The light belongs to Krishna. The deity is Krishna. Prabhupada is manifesting Krishna. Every devotee is manifesting to some degree Krishna. So when we see the world like that, how can anything upset or disturb or shake or throttle us? It can't, because we are Krishna conscious. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any? Yes, please. Somebody want to get the mic? So, any of you have questions? Oh, it's coming. Or is it? Yeah. Who had their hand up? Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. Okay. Not to divert the topic or anything of these wonderful pastimes, but I was wondering, today's Holy Ekadasi Day, I was wondering if you could say anything about the benefits of following Ekadasi or perform a devotional service on Ekadasi or anything like that? Or you want me to wait after?
You want some more information?
Some juice, Ekadasi? Something to inspire me, yeah.
Well, first of all, Ekadasi is a day. First, why should you avoid grains? Because there's a little demon in all the grains right now, and he stays there. That's a fact. If you ever read the story of the little demon who's in the grains today, and then he takes off at the appropriate time, and then you can eat the grains at that time. So, therefore, you don't want to eat grains which are tainted, which are polluted. You want to eat grains that are free of that. So that's the first thing. The second thing, Ekadasi serves another purpose for devotees. One of the chief purposes, of course, is giving up grains and giving up beans is a little bit of an austerity for many of us. Because of the fact that we're used to having grains on a daily basis, or we have corn, or we have peas, or we have rice. All of these things are very nourishing and very substantial, and they give us a good, hearty, strong feeling, is it not? So, therefore, you're being asked to give them up for today. So one may say, well, you know, but they make me feel so good, and I have so much energy and strength to go and serve Krishna. Nonetheless, don't get attached to anything in this material world, Krishna is saying, including your grains. So give them up for a day. Some people give up not only grains and beans, but they give up eating completely for a half a day, some for a whole day, some until the next day. They completely fast. And they don't even take water. They make every Ekadasi a nirjal. I know people who do this. So they do this. Why would they do this? It's a little bit uncomfortable to do something like this. They do it as a way of saying, my dear Lord, to deny myself or to bear a little difficulty for you simply states or affirms that you are worth the difficulty. This is my love for you. My love is being expressed by the fact that I am uncomfortable. I am in a little bit of pain. But you're worth bearing it. For example, some of you have been mothers here. Well, you know, the kid, he screams at night and wake you up. But you don't scold a little baby because he's screaming at night because he's hungry. Or maybe he's past stool and he wants to be changed. You don't scream or shut up. You don't say that to a little baby because you love the child. Even though it's very painful to listen to that screeching, howling sound. Some of you fathers, you know, mothers. It's sometimes I used to hear some of my neighbors, even with the earplugs, that it's such a high pitch that it Krishna has arranged, invented it so that you must take heed. You may take interest. So we bear difficulties. We bear austerities for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna doesn't like to see you bear difficulties. No. But if you bear them because you simply want to show that you're worth it, my Lord. You're worth bearing difficulties. If you go back in history, the ancient Christians, some of the austerities they used to perform when the Romans told them to decry Jesus Christ or reject the teachings of Jesus Christ, they said, "No way, Jose, no way, no way." Well, that means torture. So what? So what? Torture me. They were martyrs. They were tortured in so many ways. Women, men, even children, put on the rack and torn apart. That was their love offering to the Lord. They offered, they felt Jesus is worth it. He had died on a cross, he was nailed to it, and he bore so much pain and suffering for them that why can't I bear a little pain for him? So the important point of ekadasi is that it's really, it's a little bit of self-denial there. And self-denial is what we're about. And Prabhupada did praise austerity. In fact, he used the phrase that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins. You all remember that. So what does it mean it's a wealth? It means you obtain spiritual merit. As long as you don't do it in a prideful way. For example, let's say you don't eat anything today. And don't even drink anything. And then tomorrow you go around and you've told 100 people, "Hey, you know, I Nirjala Ekadasi yesterday. Yeah, I observed Nirjala. Did you hear? I did." And 100 people know that you didn't fast. Well, what kind of benefit are you going to get from that? The whole ego is involved. You want to be glorified. You want to be adored. You want to be honored. You want to be applauded. Hey, he observed Nirjala on a non-Nirjala day. Wow, what an austerity. What a devotee. If that's what you're looking for, that's all you're going to get. You're not going to go back to home, back to Godhead. You'll come back here for more adoration, more profit, and more distinction. So the purpose, as I have said, is to please Krishna in the ultimate analysis. Austerity or without respect or without relationship to pleasing Krishna is totally meaningless. There are many people in India, they sit on nails and they do all kinds of things just for adoration and distinction. Let us not be any of those. If you do something which is a little bit above and beyond what most people would do, keep it to yourself. Keep it between you and Krishna. It's your little secret with Krishna. It's devout. It's sacred. It's pure. It's like if you're married, husband and wife, you don't go out broadcasting all your little secrets to everyone on the street, do you? Of course not. They're sick. They're sacred. They're intimate. They're close. They're guarded. Similarly, when you do something special for Krishna, keep it between yourself and you will become very, very great blessings you get as a result. In fact, I was talking about Christ a few minutes ago. He said, when you do these different things, go into your closet. Don't tell anybody. Let it be there. And that's it. I've talked enough. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Bhagavatam, all glories to Sri Sri Rukmini and Dwarkadesh, Sri Sri Gaurani Thai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev, Lady Subhadra, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Yoga place, and they do kirtan, right? And they take a lot of yoga, so we're checking.